You're listening to the Book Club at 91.7 here on WVXU and WMUB. I'm Mark Purcell. It's with great pleasure that I welcome to the studio Christopher Scotton. His debut novel, The Secret Wisdom of the Earth, is in bookstores now. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. It's the story, kind of a coming-of-age story, of a young man named Kevin, who's 14 years old, and back in 1985, is recovering from a tragedy, seeing his young brother pass away and having his mom and dad both reacting to that grief and despair. Christopher Scotton, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
I wanted to begin by asking, why 1985? Was there a reason that you decided to set The Secret Wisdom of the Earth in 1985?
Yeah, that's a great question. A couple reasons. First off, I wanted to show the full arc of Kevin's relationship with the town and with his friends that he makes in the town. So toward the end of the novel actually comes to the present day, and you see Kevin as an adult. It's narrated by him as an adult, but it comes to the present day, and he returns to the town and visits some of his old friends that he made during that fateful summer in 1985. The other reason was, you know, mountaintop removal features greatly in the novel. And 1985 was when mountaintop removal really was just beginning to damage the environment, and folks really didn't understand what that damage was. And so I wanted to kind of portray that at the beginning of what I consider an awful and abhorrent practice. And also, I think that time in eastern Kentucky was just a much more innocent time, you know, pre-cell phone, you know, pre-scourge of drugs that have, you know, really kind of taken root in not just in eastern Kentucky, but in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. And so it was just, yeah, a much more innocent time for Kevin to come of age.
You know, I realized I was going to do this before we sat down in the studio, and I didn't, but Medgar, Kentucky is completely fictional or a real place?
It is a real place in my mind.
Okay, I'll give you that, Chris.
I spent a lot of time visiting eastern Kentucky as I was researching the novel and writing the novel. And it really is, it's an amalgamation of a bunch of different towns that I visited. I didn't want to locate the novel in a specific place. So Medgar, Kentucky, and the county, Missowachwie County, is also fictional. But it's very much of an amalgamation of, you know, those 13, 14, 15 counties that comprise that section of eastern Kentucky.
Oh, I know many readers will recognize the features that you mentioned. You know, will recognize eastern Kentucky in your writing. And you really show a love for that area. What is your attraction to those Appalachian Mountains?
Well, when I was in my teens and 20s, I did a tremendous amount of backcountry camping and backpacking and living off the land in Appalachia, primarily in West Virginia and Virginia. We actually didn't get down to eastern Kentucky during those forays. And I fell in love with the mountains and the music and the people. It's just so rich in history, and the people are wonderful and quirky characters. And I love it. And I located it in eastern Kentucky because I think eastern Kentucky especially has been hard hit by mountaintop removal. And, mm-hmm. You know, I think disproportionately so. And so I wanted to write about that paradox of, you know, this, you know, incredibly beautiful place that is being so ravaged by this practice. And, you know, the paradox of, you know, the one economic engine in that region is destroying the natural beauty. And I just thought that was sad and something that I really wanted to write about.
Speaking with Christopher Scotton, the author of the novel The Secret Wisdom of the Earth. You can learn more about Chris and the book at wvxu.org. You talk about coal. Coal does play in the mountaintop removal, and the whole industry plays a major role in the novel. And I love how you make clear that there's quite a paradox, that, you know, this is something that people are making a living by, but at the same time, it's destroying where they live. And is this an anti-coal book? I mean, I didn't really sense it. I thought you tried to argue on both sides. I mean, you let us know that the industry is doing horrible things to the environment, but is that a message that you wanted the book to carry to readers?
It absolutely is not an anti-coal book, and I did not want to write a, you know, anti-coal polemic. It is anti-mountaintop removal. I think that practice needs to stop. I think it, you know, the cheap coal that we're getting from Eastern Kentucky isn't worth the permanent scar that we're leaving on the land, in my opinion. But yet at the same time, you know, I met with miners who were working, you know, and thankful to have great jobs in a mountaintop removal operation, you know, making $50,000, $60,000 a year, and they do so to feed their family. And they're also outdoorsmen, and they love the land, and they love the place. So, you know, they're making a very, very difficult choice to stay and work and feed their family in an industry that is scarring the landscape. There are no easy answers, and unfortunately, you know, just given the location of Eastern Kentucky and the difficulty to get in, there really aren't many other economic engines to drive the economy.
Mm-hmm. Well, in Medgar, Kentucky, I want to say your description of the town is so in depth and detailed. I mean, it brings a picture in the mind easily from places I've seen in Eastern Kentucky, and I wondered how you kept everything straight, how you knew where Miss Janie's Paris hair salon and, always was.
And Notion Shop.
And Notion Shop.
You got to remember the Notion Shop.
I mean, how did you, as a writer, you know, maintain that map in your head? Or did you, I just felt when I was reading, Chris, that I would have needed to draw a map on a piece of paper just to keep everything straight.
That's exactly what I did, actually.
Did you?
That's a fairly common, you know, writerly technique. As you're, you know, as you're creating this world on the page, you know, a good writer will kind of keep notes fairly concise about, you know, which roads go where.
Right. You go to Route 17.
Exactly.
And you take a look.
That's exactly right. So it just helps to draw a map of the region. That way, you know, okay, wait, if I'm going to Grubby Mitchell's house, I need to take a right here, you know.
Yes.
You know, if you make a mistake, hopefully that'll be caught by your fact checker. You know, Grand Central, my publisher, just had a fantastic fact checker who caught a bunch of mistakes I made in things like that. It really does help to make good notes as you're going along.
And what about characters? You have some incredibly rich characters. I mean, Kevin, his buddy Buzzy, Kevin's granddad, all very well written, you know, deep backgrounds. Did you do the same for the characters? Keep a map of characters as well?
Absolutely. So, I don't outline the plot before I write. I just kind of let it happen in my head, but I do a very, very detailed character analysis of every main character. Literally, I write down, you know, three or four pages of their history and their loves and losses and likes and dislikes, even stuff that and characteristics that I don't necessarily use in the novel. I just create this incredibly detailed map, if you will, of them. And I just internalize it, so I know how they'll behave in the plot. And then I let them combust, you know, with each other in the plot and drive it forward. And if I think it's going in the right direction, I'll keep down that path. Several times when I was writing the novel, I got pretty far down a path, and I realized, okay, well, this isn't working, and had to kind of run back the other way and get rid of, you know, 50 pages or whatever that I had written.
Well, when we spoke before here on the book club at 91.7, we talked about the long torturous, well, not torturous journey, but the long journey that this novel came to along to be in print, and you spent close to 15 years on it, not writing the whole time. But I remember reading somewhere that there was a catalyst, that you'd been writing this for a while, and it, you had to put it aside, but there was something that happened that had you go back to the novel. What was that event?
I got fired.
Oh, good job. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So I was living in London, and we started a company over there, and you know, we sold it, and it was, you know, a wonderful success. And then I came back to the U.S. and I started another tech company that just wasn't working. And you know, typically what happens, you know, in a startup, when it's not working, you work twice as hard to make it work and pivot and, you know, try to figure out what's wrong and why it's not making it. And we did all kinds of pivoting, you know, right, left, circling, you know, whatever. And we just couldn't make it work. It was it was a search engine that was trying to compete with Google. You know, we all know how that turned out.
So, I didn't know there was any economic.
We became Google Roadkill along with a lot of other folks.
That's right. And the board fired you.
And the board fired me. That's right. Yeah. So they should have, because, you know, nothing I was doing was working, right? And so I came home, you know, and tail between my legs, and probably had way too much to drink that first night. But the next day, I took the novel off the shelf and started writing again. And because I was unemployed, I could write full time. And so I was able to really complete the novel in about 2 years after that, you know, get most of it down. Then I found an agent, and then there was a whole process of, you know, re-editing and really getting it ready for sale. And that took about another year.
Christopher Scotton, author of The Secret Wisdom of the Earth. Information about it at our website, wvxu.org, a coming-of-age story sent in Eastern Kentucky. A lot of action in this book. And Earth, you know, in the title, Earth's in the title, but Earth is something that's very important throughout the book, not only with the mountaintop mining, but one of the characters, Paul, used to dig a hole and lay in it and be healed. And you talk about madstone. What is madstone?
So a madstone is a kind of a calcified piece of matter from the stomach of a cud-chewing animal.
Okay.
I know your listeners are probably wondering, you know, where can I get one?
Yeah, right.
and what a madstone does is it has healing properties, allegedly. So, you know, if someone is bitten by a rabid dog or a snake, you apply this madstone to the bite, and it allegedly sucks out the poison and heals the wound. And so a madstone from a cow has, you know, okay healing properties. The madstone from a deer has, you know, much, much greater healing properties. And the madstone from an albino deer has the most intense healing properties. So those are absolutely, you know, the most coveted. However, you know, you can't buy a madstone. If you purchase a madstone, it loses its power. So it has to be given to you. This is absolutely true. This is the madstone lore, which was fascinating. I've never actually used one, nor do I own one, unfortunately. But there is a madstone in the novel, and really the earth acts as a madstone for one character who is horribly beaten by his father. And he digs a shallow hole and in the earth and covers himself to heal the pain of that beating.
We're running a little short on time, so I'll ask one more question, and that's, how much research did you do? Well, you mentioned the madstone and being from a cud-chewing animal, but you also, early in the book, in a chapter whose title I'll go over right now, but you talk about castrating bulls. And your description of castrating bulls, I reacted just like Kevin does in the book, in the, you know, kind of protecting yourself when
right.
It goes along. Did you go out and do research to find out how to castrate a bull and dehorn a bull?
So no bulls were castrated in the writing of this novel, I must say.
Okay, good.
I did a lot of research, obviously, you know, because you have to write authentically about things like that. And I happen to know a large animal veterinarian, and so I kind of shadowed her on a couple of her rounds. She's more of a horse person.
Mm-hmm.
But she vetted the veterinary scenes to make sure that they were accurate. But yeah, I mean, it's a bloody business. You know, they typically castrate bulls when they're 3 weeks old. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, castrating a yearling bull is can be dangerous. So for obvious reasons, you don't want to get your head kicked in.
That's right. And I should mention that there's this scene in the book because Kevin's grandfather is a large animal veterinarian. So
yes.
I should add that for listeners to know. So that's why we're getting off on castration here. But, you know, beautiful description. And as I said, it made me wince more than once. So,
beautiful and bloody.
Yeah, beautiful and bloody. But a lot of great parts here in the book. Thank you very much for sharing. And thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you, Mark.
Christopher Scotton, his book is The Secret Wisdom of the Earth. Learn more about Chris and the novel at our website, wvxu.org. And as always, thanks again for listening to the Book Club at 91.7.